Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on media, entertainment, and technology. Today I'm speaking with Margaret Dean,
Head of Studio at Crunchyroll, the world's most popular anime brand, with over 50 million registered users, 2 million subscribers, and more than 30 million followers across their social platforms. Margaret, why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about Crunchyroll?
Okay. Well, Crunchyroll was really the beginning of it all. Like 10, 12, 13 years ago, there was a group of engineers from UC Berkeley who created a sharing platform, a video sharing platform, and they launched it, and it got a pretty good response. And what they started to notice, that the main thing that people were sharing was anime. And they were smart enough to figure out that this is a thing, like they should do something with this. And so they started to brand it and to really, you know, focus on the anime piece of it. After a little while, they realized most of the stuff that was being shared was illegal, was pirated. And so they realized or decided that they really needed to go legit. And so they went over to Japan and spent some time over there developing relationships, and then eventually was able to get TV Tokyo to license them Naruto, which is a huge anime hit. And so that was basically the start. And then after that, they just kept going back to Japan and licensing, you know, and made Crunchyroll completely legit. Like, there is nothing on Crunchyroll that's not legal. And really developed those relationships with producers of anime in Tokyo. And for the longest time, we were the only game in town. And so we pretty much got everything that came out of Japan. And the other part that's great and our fans love is that we stream it day and date with when it comes out in Japan. So if you're a paid subscriber, you get to see it, you know, probably within an hour of when it comes out in Japan.
That's great.
Yeah.
So for the listeners who aren't anime, animation aficionados, what do we need to know about this genre of content?
I think what everybody should know, because it's amazing, is anime really takes animation beyond, they think of animation as a medium, not as a genre. In the U.S. and North America, they primarily use animation or think of animation as only being content for children or primetime comedy. In Japan, it's way more than that. It covers all genres. You know, so you'll have horror anime, you'll have sci-fi, you'll have fantasy, you'll have slice of life, rom-coms. There's a whole special trope that's about characters who go into a game and have adventures, or, you know, the whole story takes place actually being inside, you know, a game. So that's one thing, is the spanse of the kind of stories that they can tell. Also, the content is, there is anime for kids. Our focus is primarily on content for adults. And so we are telling mature stories with very complex characters, you know, facing complex situations and challenges, often in a vast, huge, unique universe. There's usually some sort of fantastical element to the work that we do. And then the other piece that I think is really unique about anime is their focus on the art of animation and the visual beauty of it. And then the directing is very cinematic, so they take that very seriously. And it's really, again, about telling these big stories, you know, and interesting stories.
You've been quoted as saying that your mission is to open up the world of animation outside of Japan to embrace the diversity you just spoke of, the multiple types of stories that are told in animation, murder mysteries, slice of life, science fiction, whatever it may be. And so where do you start? What does that look like in terms of the path towards your accomplishing that mission with this new studio?
That's a great question, and it's a question that I think about every day. And we have many conversations about that, trying to figure out, because it is so vast. One of the things that, being a streaming company, we have access to a lot of metrics. You know, so we know, as far as the anime that we stream, we know what people are watching. We know what are the story tropes that they are fascinated with. And actually, we've created a map of, you know, the sort of cluster of different types of stories that are told. And so what we're looking for are, what are the gaps? You know, where are those areas where, you know, maybe things are a little light this year, or where we can complement? I think one of our goals with originals in particular is that we're not trying to duplicate what is being done in Japan. You know, like we're not trying to replace it by any means. Like, we love what they do. They do it much better than we do it. But we're looking to sort of bring some sort of a complement to it, add to it.
Why do they do it better than we do it?
Well, they've been doing it for like, what, out of 50 years, you know, 50, 60, 80 years.
So it's the experience and insight that that tenure brings.
Yeah, and I think also there's, you know, it's particular, right? I mean, anime, which is like all Japanese filmmaking, I mean, it's culturally defined. And, you know, so there's certain stylistic things that is part of, you know, that kind of filmmaking that is particular to them, and they all do it. It's part of their culture. So it's not really, it's not the stuff necessarily that we've grown up with.
So talking about tenure, you've been in this business for just a little while.
Uh-huh.
In preparation for today's conversation, we checked out your filmography. Mm. You've got a lot of credits, an impressive body of work.
Thank you.
You have been doing this way before it was cool. So what got you into this, and how did you build traction in a space in this industry that's been very challenged for a long time?
Well, what got me started was I studied art. Like, I got a degree in experimental film and video. And so I've always been attracted to the visual arts. And I'm not somebody who draws myself. I was more of a photographer, filmmaker. And then I also seem to have a knack or talent for management. And so I then went to UCLA to the producers program, where I basically learned how the industry worked and, you know, how shows and movies got made. But before I did that, in between the two school programs, I spent time teaching animation to kids. Again, not teaching them to draw, because I don't draw, but teaching them basically filmmaking, but using objects, doing like stop motion, essentially. So when I was at UCLA, actually people knowing that were started to talk to me about, like, maybe you should think about going into animation. And initially I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to make big movies like everybody else. And then I was at the Telluride Film Festival as a student, and there was a conference, like, where they brought in people, like, you know, established executives and stuff like that. And Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy, you know, the Amblin people came in and were doing a presentation. And most of the questions that were being asked were, how can I get you to hire me? How can I get you to make my movie? How can I get my script to you? And frankly, I was very bored with this conversation. And so I just asked them what they thought would make a good producer. And they lit up and give a great answer, and it was, like, really interesting, and the whole energy of the room went up. And so after the whole thing was over, I went up to the stage and went to Frank Marshall, and as I was walking up, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to ask him. I mean, I got to ask him something. I got to have another really interesting question. And it wasn't until the moment I came face-to-face with him that in my brain it went, what do you think about producing animation? And he was like, oh my God, animation is the greatest thing ever. And this was in the early 90s, you know? And so, you know, it was like, this is great. And we just did a, you know, Roger Rabbit short on the front of my movie and The Simpsons. And are you in LA? And I was like, yeah, I'm at UCLA. And he goes, call my office. So I had my Hollywood moment. And I called his office, it didn't return. I called again, didn't return. I finally sent him a fax. That tells you when time here, what time, what age we were in.
I know what that is.
Yes. I sent him a fax with my resume and a note that basically said, I know you're really busy. You're not, I mean, I'm way down on your call list, I'm sure, but I just want an opportunity. I can be an intern. I'll work for free. I just need somebody to open the door. The next day, I got a call from somebody else saying, come over here and be an intern on Family Dog. And that was the start for me. And when I walked in, I was like, oh my gosh, like, these are my people.
That's a great story for so many reasons. But one of the lessons that you just taught us all is, you know, opportunity is what, half luck and half preparation,
yeah.
Right? And so you said you had a Hollywood moment, and you did, but you created that moment.
Yeah.
by showing initiative to ask the question, but also had you not followed up and really been tenacious in your desire to pursue that, it just wouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah.
And so you had your Hollywood moment, but you also created it
and
have really taken control of crafting your path, which has been really interesting.
Thanks.
And you've been a woman in a field that's been largely dominated by men. Why is that?
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that question. With all the work I do with women in animation, you know, I get asked that all the time.
Well, and I've got to tell you, with all the conversations I have with women in all aspects of the industry, I feel like we're having the same conversation all over the place, too. But it's really a curious world in animation.
Right. Well, especially if you look at the other statistics, which is animation programs are predominantly female. Like CalArts last year was 75% female.
Is that a more recent statistic?
I would say since around 2010.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's also the sort of situation for most art programs. Like when I was in art school, we were mostly female. Mm-hmm. And I would say somewhere around 60%, 70% female. And that was when I first heard, and I started looking at the future. The only future we had was to become professors, to teach. And so I was looking into what percentage of professors were women, and it was like 3%. And I was like, how is that possible? And so it was the same thing when we started doing women in animation. I went out looking at what is the enrollment. And sure enough, across the board, on average, women are 60-65% of the student body. CalArts happens to be super high. And yet, when we started like 5 years ago, women in animation, women were just barely 20% of the creative workforce. So this makes no sense. And that is essentially what women in animation is about, is like we are going to rectify that number. So we have a goal by 2025 that it'll be 50-50, that women have at least 50% of the creative roles.
And how doable is that goal? Is that a stretch
goal? I think it's very
doable. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
So, President of Women in Animation, it was founded in 1995. It is the only organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that the day will come where we don't need the women in organizations, but I also recognize the value and impact that these organizations drive, and I've been a recipient of a lot of that in the course of my career as well. So when you look at women in animation and the role it's playing, how do you see it evolving as the opportunities shift for women in this business?
Well, as I mentioned before, we have a goal or a call to action of 50-50 by 2025. And many of us on the board, in fact, I think probably all of us on the board, believe when we hit that 2025, the organization will either transform or more than likely we will shut it down, because we will have achieved, because I think the changes that just achieving that one goal will cause throughout the industry is going to be phenomenal. And I don't even think we can imagine what that would be.
Well, we know that women bring different perspectives to storytelling. And you mentioned earlier the fantasy aspect of animation. So creativity and imagination and life experience comes to fruition in animation differently than it does in other types of media and other genres. So I would imagine that more female participation will drive a different type of storytelling and a different dimension to the creativity. And you're nodding at me. So
yes,
I think
I agree.
Seeing that. And
yes,
so
yes.
Today, you and others are in leadership roles in this field, and you are able to drive a different type of creative dynamic. How is that playing out in the content we're seeing? And what does that look like in a different type of storytelling?
Well, I think you see it in a lot of the current animation. Like the other day I was hearing somebody talk about, they were pitching me a story and it was unfortunately for kids. I mean, so I had to say, unfortunately for me, it was for kids. But they basically apologized because the main character was a male, a boy. And they were like, I know, but I think it's really different is what she was saying. It was like, because you see all these shows now and the main characters are girls. And I was like, you realize what you're saying, right? It's like, the world has flipped over like that, that now the uncommon thing is for, especially in children's programming, is to create a show that has a boy as a main character. I mean, I still think there are shows out there that are doing that or being made that are that way, but the creative process, the pitching phase, you know, where people are just coming up with the ideas of the shows, I see a drastic difference, and not just from female creators, but from all creators. You know, men are very interested in telling the female story because it's a story that hasn't been told. I think that's the fundamental thing, is like, that's what makes it interesting for everybody, is nobody knows what we think, you know, and what our experience is, because it hasn't been portrayed very commonly or very often in media.
And you said something that I just found particularly interesting. That's what makes it interesting for everybody.
Absolutely.
So the audience is really diverse, consuming this female-centric storytelling, yeah, or this female perspective in storytelling, which is good for the world.
No, absolutely. So I mean, in the mission for women in animation, you know, our focus is, you know, is to hit this 50-50, but because we think it will make better entertainment, which will therefore make our culture better, which will make life better. And it's really less about equity. I mean, it certainly does represent that, but that's not our goal. We're not going for it because we want our piece of the pie.
It's big and aspirational, and that makes it really exciting. So share with us a little bit about what it's like to be the head of a studio that's really launching. You're building a business. You're very much an entrepreneur. It's very ground up. But you've got to keep pace with the industry at the same time and push some product out there and gain some traction. And so what does that balancing act look like? And how do you balance left brain, right brain, and the skills it takes to do that?
Well, that's a big question. One thing that I did want to say is that we actually have two facilities. We have one in Burbank and we have one in Tokyo. And so in addition to balancing all the stuff you were just talking about, I'm also balancing a second studio in a foreign country that does production a little bit different than the way that we do production. And so there's a lot going there, which is, it's another whole separate conversation. Interesting one. Yeah, I mean, I love building things. When I look back at my career, it really has been, I'm brought into a situation where either there's something that's in trouble that needs to be totally revamped, or there is nothing, and I need to build something, and I just love doing that. So it's not, like, particularly stressful. I mean, it's stressful. It's always stressful, but I love it. I sort of thrive on it, and there's just something about, I love having an idea and then putting the work into it, and there it is. Like, that's, I'm a production person in my heart, you know, it's just, that's why I like making shows. It's like somebody goes, we should do this show about this thing, and then boom, there it is, you know, and it's realized. I love that.
Balancing the left brain, right brain aspect of your job, I think you're a creative person. You studied art. You clearly have a passion for the creative side of the business, but you're building a studio, structuring a business, to your earlier point, balancing two studios in different countries, in different cultures, at different points of evolution, operating differently. It takes a very different type of skill set and balance to do. So yes, we're all busy. Yes, you know, if you're lucky enough to be passionate about what you do, you wake up and it's not exhausting, it's energizing. But you're sort of moving from left brain to right brain. And what is that like? And did you ever foresee the day where you would be in that type of leadership role, focusing on the business aspects as much as the creative aspects?
Yes, I had hoped so. When I look back, I was like hoping that. And I think the one thing I would say is that I've actually probably come at it reverse from the way you're describing it. My experience has been primarily in production. For some reason, I have this management talent. And so being able to put people together and, you know, I used to joke that my medium was people, time, and money. Like, I can orchestrate, you know. And the other thing, which is key to what you're asking me, is building teams and being able to figure out who are the players that I need in this situation and how do they complement each other. And then how do I keep them motivated and directed and get them to feel, and especially when you're working with creative folks, to keep them happy and, like, make them, because that's how they'll do their best work.
And inspired.
And inspired,
And
yes.
So how do you do that? What's your approach to keeping people
inspired? I keep the artists important. Like, I make sure that they understand that regardless of everything else, their vision or the work, the creative work that they're doing is the whole reason that we're here. It's the most important thing that's happening. And get them to not worry about, like, have a system and a pipeline that's running so well that there is no resources or energy on their part where they have to think about, am I going to have that computer that I need, or am I going to have that piece of paper or pencil that I need? Is there somebody who's going to remind me that I need to be someplace, or, you know, that they feel that support and structure? One of my favorite quotes was by a woman named Sue Croyer, who is one of the, you know, a very early on key person in animation. And she said that everything she learned about production management, she learned from being a preschool teacher.
That probably applies to so many things. So
yeah.
Many things. That's a great.
Yeah. But I mean, and it's not at all demeaning. It's not meant to be demeaning at all to artists, you know, that they're just children. No, it's that they're sensitive, and the kind of thoughtfulness that you have to be with children, where you appreciate them and validate them and yet give them limits. And, you know, like, kids thrive on limits. Like, they need them. Like, you know, letting them just flail is not healthy, you know. And so it's the same thing in any kind of a, you know, creative environment, is you need to have that balance of you're wonderful, you're great, we want you to have everything you need. You know, you're in this corral, you need to move within this confined space.
Rather than asking what keeps you up at night, I want to know what's getting you up in the morning right now. What are the opportunities that most excite you, that get you most energized, short-term or long-term?
I think the potential of what we're doing at Crunchyroll is amazing. I think the idea of creating animated content for adults that could be, you know, beautiful animation, because I feel like that's been lost in North America, most of the adult content is comedic, and there is something about comedy being, the less attractive it is, the funnier it is, which I think is actually true. And, you know, that there is some sort of element of funniness about it when it looks kind of goofy or different and unique, but in a sort of not attractive way. So for us to be able to go, you know what, we can be serious about the animation that we're doing and the storytelling we're doing and make something beautiful and inspiring and deep that our audience would love. I've been wanting to do that from the beginning of when I got into animation, and when I was pitching things to people, those were the kind of shows I was pitching. The response I would get would be, this is awesome, I would want to watch this, I can't sell this to anybody. You know, there's no home for this. And now there is, you know, and that's the thing I'm most excited about.
Well, your passion is contagious and your experience is impressive, and it's always nice to end on a high note. So with that big, bright opportunity ahead, both in terms of what you're trying to accomplish through Women in Animation and also what you're building with the studio, it's tremendously exciting.
Yeah, so I think so too.
I think we should end on that future is bright note. And thank you so much for spending time with us.
Okay, thank you.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.